True Crimers, welcome to Break the Case. I'm your host. I'm Jen Coffendaffer. Thanks for being here this morning with us. You guys, you can see it below right there. Day 44. 43 days gone. I keep recalling that in the Idaho 4 case, it was day 47 that Brian Koberger was arrested. So we're still shy of that day. Again, we're speaking about Nancy Guthrie, who was reported missing on a Sunday when she didn't show up to her gathering. She gathered after COVID with friends to watch her church service rather than going into church. So that is when she was first reported missing. Although, and I keep bringing it up, hoping that the sheriff will see this podcast maybe and say, yeah, maybe I should clear that up. In his first press conference, he reported that his officers were at her house on scene on Saturday night. That's a specific quote from him. So anyway, we don't know if there was anything that went out that night prior, other than I think what is likely a missed speech. But nevertheless, the first, we know she was certainly missing. So I want to there obviously isn't a lot of new developments. So I just want to focus on one, I wouldn't call it a development, but something certainly that's in the news and I'm really trying to talk about and feature because I think it's super important. And that is the billboards that have been ordered, asked for, if you will, by the FBI. But the FBI is behind all these billboards with a private company actually footing the bill for them, which is great. What I found most interesting about these is that they are in California. They are in Arizona. I haven't heard of any reports with all the media and YouTubers and streamers and social media folks. I haven't heard one thing about billboards being in the Tucson area, which I always say, and I posted about this morning again, is people in that area may or may not have any idea about Nancy Guthrie missing. I use it as an example, the pizza delivery guy delivered pizza right to her door. I had no idea what door he was at. And it's just true. Newsies, true crimers, we don't get it. We say, wait a minute, how can anyone not know about Nancy Guthrie? But many don't. And certainly throughout the United States, they don't. So I love the idea that the Bureau went with, and that is getting billboards in important states, states that somehow they've tied to their investigation. So let's look at the states they chose. California, obviously Arizona, although not in the Tucson area, purportedly, and Texas, and particularly Texas is Houston. Now, Houston was my first office of assignment. I was there for well over 10 years. And Houston, obviously, there's a huge, huge population of individuals who come from Mexico. Huge. It's just unbelievable. It's kind of like when you go to Miami and the Cuban culture and people who are now Cuban Americans or migrated from Cuba are there. In fact, if you go to Miami, for those of you who've been, really Spanish is almost like the first language whenever, especially you're in any service sort of interest industry, whether it's at a restaurant, you're at the airport, you're at the rental car. It's so unbelievable that it's really English, I believe, for many, many people in Miami is a second language. And Houston is not dissimilar to that in some ways. Believe me, Houston is boots and cowboy, hats. It's a very, very culturally cowboyish city. There are millions and millions of people in Houston. Houston is gigantic. But nevertheless, there is a huge cultural influence, certainly, and Mexican Americans and Mexican migrants that are there. So I found it interesting that the locations that were chosen. And you could say, well, Jen, they chose states that are in close proximity. But I look at it as, because there's lots of states that are north that I haven't heard anything about, north of Arizona, that weren't picked, and New Mexico that wasn't picked. But when I look at the states that were chosen, it's so obvious that it's a Mexico type of proximity, as well as cultural ties. When you look at Arizona and you look at California and you look at Texas. Now, I will tell you this, even though the FBI didn't foot the bill for this, I will tell you that there is absolutely no doubt in my mind that there is a reason they chose those states. They didn't just flip a coin and say, let's see, where should we put up all these billboards at? Utah, New Mexico, Montana. No. New York, Florida, no. They chose states that somehow their investigation is tied to. And I have to kind of get a little smile on my face because I think it's so interesting that, of course, all the social media folks and all the mainstream media folks have been camped out now for weeks, for some 40 days or more, at Nancy's home and at Annie's home. Not so much Annie's anymore, although I just saw, unfortunately, you know, a stream of someone there, and Tommaso comes out and says, can you please just, I don't know what he says, but I think he says, from what I can hear, is, what are you doing here, I think. And then Tommaso says that. And then the guy says something like, oh, yeah, I'm looking at the street. I really probably should post that. And then he ends up leaving. And the guy's so excited. Oh, I saw Tommaso Cioni. Tommaso Cioni is a victim. Tommaso Cioni loved Nancy. Tommaso Cioni has nothing to do with the abduction of Nancy Guthrie. Nothing. Savannah Guthrie, if you're to believe Megyn Kelly and Megyn Kelly's sources and her affiliations, is reporting that Savannah Guthrie is absolutely livid and incensed that people are going and still going after Tommaso Cioni and Annie. She's livid about it. She stopped short, Megyn Kelly stopped short of saying whether she knows whether they're going to sue or not. And I don't know what they will do. I think a lot of it will depend on what damages they can show, damages to their reputation, damages, because that's really what it comes down to when so many people are defamed. Look, all the people on YouTube that are defamed and mainstream media that are defamed, lies that are told about them, negative words that are said about so many people that are absolutely just false. And so certainly people, if they are in any sort of public view, are defamed often. People just like to do that, especially when they can sit behind their keyboard unidentified and say a lot of really nasty stuff and just get it out to the ether. So when you think about that, though, the point is when it comes to this case, again, there's no information that Tommaso and Annie have done anything. And the question is, how has it affected their life? How has it affected their reputation? Will it continue to persist? Can there be a direct nexus between being accused of basically being a murderer over and over again? I mean, it's still happening. It's all over the place. You can just look. If that is affecting their work, is that affecting, you know, Tommaso's job as a teacher? Is that affecting his mental health? He took down all his socials, so we know that it closed him in. A lot of people love their socials. Imagine if all of a sudden you couldn't use YouTube, or you couldn't listen to your favorite podcast necessarily, or you couldn't interact on Facebook with the people you want to listen to because you don't want to be seen up there. I guess you could still listen to a podcast without being seen as long as you didn't make a comment. But nevertheless, or not being, you know, being trapped in your home, knowing that if you go out in where you've grown up around and where you are currently living, meaning Annie grew up there, and you can't go out into public because you might be called a murderer. Listen, we saw it in the, we're seeing it right now still in John O'Keefe case, right? Those poor witnesses, they can't go anywhere. They can't go to a food court and just have a burger without being screamed and yelled at and called murderer. It's unbelievable what is still going on in that case. But nevertheless, is that what Annie and Tommaso are also experiencing? Then you can start proving damages. So it'll be interesting to see if some of these really loud YouTube voices, some of these accounts with hundreds and hundreds of thousands of followers, and even if they don't have hundreds of thousands of followers, this one account doesn't have hundreds of thousands of followers, but he has millions and millions of views when he goes after Tommaso and Annie. Not when he does anything else, but if he goes after Tommaso and Annie, so it's clear to me why he's doing it. It'll be interesting to see. You know, we saw that huge $10 million award for the TikToker that relentlessly accused a college professor of killing the Idaho 4 kids, Zanna, Ethan, Maddie, and Kaylee, right? He went totally after them, after that person. And that person had just had enough. And they were able to prove how much that damaged their reputation and how many millions of views that TikToker got, really not because they had any evidence, but just because it's fun for them. You know, by the way, just to be crystal clear, the car has been returned. I said that I called and they had said they were returning it. They had to fix it first because they tore it apart, trying to make sure they weren't involved or that they were involved, trying to prove one way or the other any nexus. So in any event, I just wanted to mention about these billboards that I know I lost the side of my glasses. What I just cannot wrap my head around is there is absolutely no reason why Porch Guy's face is not on these billboards. It absolutely makes no sense to me. I fail to understand why they would put Nancy's face on there, except for I do agree it's important for them to understand, people to understand what's happened. But the big face on here should be Porch Guy. Because I can tell you the abductors, if they took her to Texas, if they took her to California, if they took her someplace else in Arizona, if they crossed the border with her, her face was never seen. In my view, she would have been covered up with those items in that very full backpack that Porch Guy had. Because under the belief she was alive, which I believe she still would have been alive at this point early on, she's a tough woman. Anything you read about Nancy Guthrie, she was tough, mentally great constitution. And, you know, mental power is really strong. So we have no reason to believe. We know she was hurt, but you don't see blood all over the place. You know, there's no spatter as if she was brutalized on that porch. We don't know about what happened inside, obviously. But if we're to believe she was taken alive initially, then if we're to follow that premise and they ended up taking her, they would have wanted to hood her so they wouldn't see what car she was going to be put in. They would have wanted to gag her. And that's why I don't believe that blood is aspirated blood at all. I believe that blood are the drops. And then when it drops, it fans out. I want to show you another picture in case you weren't on with us. about what happens to a blood droplet when it hits. Got a really good picture here. And actually, I'll bring up again a picture of this spatter. So here is a picture of what blood looks like when it hits. Just a droplet when it goes down and hits. You see how it makes all that fine spatter? You can imagine it hits and spatters. So you see this fine situation. And again, this is just my opinion. It's shared with many other people. Other people have looked at it. And then there's many other quote unquote experts that think that this is her. Oops, I have too many on here. Let me get rid of one here. It's really frustrating. So when you do these studios, you can only put up so many pictures in a session, 10. And I obviously had more than 10. So let me get this one up, though, because this is actually from the porch. Here it is. So I just want you to draw reference to this. This is the area a lot of people are saying where she spit or coughed up blood. Now, believe me, if that's the case, I'm thrilled, because then we have definite proof. But, and I know there's a couple of really, individuals who know a lot that say that. And they're not blood spatter expert. None of us are. We just can go by what we see. Dale Lundberg, who's been at hundreds of sites of deaths and has seen spatter versus droplets, he believes, as I do, that this is from the drop of the blood dropping. And then, as I've commented at the beginning, I think as she turns, as the person turns with her and shuts those doors, that she's here for, you know, a couple of seconds, which causes this dripping to be in this place. You know, Google Trends, I want to talk to everybody. I brought up in every case I do Google Trends. I did it on Brian Koberger very early on, talked about how somebody was Googling Brian Koberger before anybody knew the name Brian Koberger, because I believed it was Brian Koberger. So we did a whole Google Trends on that. Also really did one strongly on the case in Ohio of the beautiful couple that was murdered in their beds. And I actually did one on this case too, and I didn't find anything that I thought was that revealing, although I know some people say they did. But you know what, Sarah? I'm going to show you what my Google Trends review caused or showed me, and why I didn't really roll with it. But I'm gonna do that. I think that's a great idea. I definitely will. Thank you, Sarah, for that suggestion. So really quickly, back to these, I'm very perplexed at who is guiding. And now we have, just so you know, I had estimated her weight at 150, talking about how difficult it is for one singular person to be able to actually carry somebody even lighter than that. 150 pounds, certainly for one person, you know, he's estimated to be average build, quote, 5'9 to 5'10, is so difficult. I wish I had my video up here. Maybe I can put it up here of, I think I had it. I don't know if I did or not. I don't think I have it here, but I was trying to prove a point with the Celeste Rivas case of how it would be absolutely impossible. Okay. 0.001% chance, because you can't say anything's impossible, for D4VD David, the singer, who's the suspect in the murder of Celeste Rivas, for him, that little teeny puny guy, to pick up little Celeste, it would have been impossible for him. And I showed my husband, who's about probably about 170, 175, 5'9", 5'10". He's 5'10" or 11, but he might have shrunk a little bit. Anyway, him, and he works out every day, so he's not weak. He's at the gym literally right now and literally every day. And he with the slipperiness of a bag, and I know we don't know that she had a bag around her, but it's impossible to pick up. Almost dead weight is so, in other words, not meaning the person's dead, but if you just relax like that, it's so difficult to manipulate and pick up and get into a trunk in this way. So I will be shocked if it is proven that Porch Guy acted alone. I really just doubt that. You can certainly firemen's carry somebody. So yes, very possible if you pick the person up from the bed, fire carrymen carried them. That certainly could be done, as long as they weren't picked up from the ground, so to speak. That makes it much more difficult. So now you have the person manipulating the car, getting what I believe the truck would be open. There is no way you're going to risk having Nancy Guthrie, who is obviously injured and hurt. You would have her gagged. You would likely have her face covered in your car at 2:30 in the morning, when vehicle stops often occur because the police are wondering, why in the world is this person out at 2:30 in the morning if there's any suspicious activity at all? So I firmly believe she would have been transported in the trunk of the vehicle wherever they took her. If they took her to California, if they took her to Mexico, if they took her to Texas, she is not sitting up in her car. Like, remember when some of these accounts, PhD, and others, do you remember when they were actually trying to make the case for the woman screaming out the window being her? Just in every, it's just, that would never happen. An abductor would never allow that. So it was very clear within about 1 second of seeing and hearing that. And I posted all about that, and I posted the video recording. That would not be Nancy Guthrie screaming at the top of her lungs, hanging out a window. This abductor would have taken care to make sure she didn't see the car. She didn't see them. That's why they're all covered. They're very concerned about that. And that she would see where they took her, the route. They would be very careful of that, and certainly that she couldn't talk. And I think this is another reason why certainly I believe that unfortunately it went bad, meaning they could have no proof of life to further make a ransom demand after the initial. Now, Cheryl McCollum, Mac, who I love, Zone 7, she brought up something I thought was very, very interesting. She brought up the fact that, well, Jen, why didn't they just stay in there with her and make the ransom demand from there, from her phone? Why not just send it all out there? And I see her point with that, and I think it's an interesting point. But remember, that puts them even in more of a tactical disadvantage for a huge period of time. I really, other than those dopes in Scottsdale that I told you have some similarities to this case, that other than those teens in Scottsdale that decided to go into a house of, and they weren't really elderly, they were in their 60s, but they had money, and they went in and tied them up and beat them, hurt them, trying to get them to transfer Bitcoin. So in other words, Cheryl's point is, why not just do it all there? And again, your exposure, in my opinion, in committing a situation like that is so huge if you stay on scene. And just in my experience, and again, these are kidnappings that have involved drug and cartel type people. Though that's my experience. This is very rare to have an 84-year-old transferred like this. But nevertheless, in my experience with that, you don't keep them at their house, because people are going to be going to their house, and you're leaving more DNA there, and you're possibly beating them there and doing all sorts of other things for an extended period of time. So trust me, 40 plus minutes and maybe longer that I've discussed, that's long enough to be in the house where this crime has been committed. So I strongly believe she was taken, and I think the authorities do too. Why do I think they were taken? I think they were taken because I think she was taken to Texas, Arizona, Mexico, or California, because that's where the FBI is looking. And I always say that the people camped out at Nancy's house and Annie's house, they're looking in the wrong place to find cool stuff to report on. This investigation is long gone from there. This investigation is across state lines. Certainly, I think still in Tucson, because I think there's a strong nexus there. And that's why they're interviewing all the haunts of Nancy to try to figure out, did this start with the people that knew her and associated with her and those locations? Or did it really start because of her exposure on NBC's Today Show? That's one of the questions the FBI is trying to find out. How did this abductor, how did these people target her? Because she is targeted. He said she was targeted. He just said, listen, like, other people aren't safe. In other words, just because the Guthries were targeted doesn't mean the Jones and the Smiths and the Browns and anybody else around there couldn't be targeted, which is a really strong statement. And it's a statement that all of us, you know, that I think all of us knew. Anybody capable of this is capable of doing it to anyone. So to me, if you have money, and I think that was really the nexus, meaning Savannah, if you are capable of somebody holding you at ransom in hopes of getting a big payday, that's what I think his point was. Not because she was 84 years old, but because there was a chance of getting a ransom. Sarah Adams, why is he playing in complete darkness? Why is he COS playing in complete darkness? Okay, I'm not 100% sure I understand that, but if I understand what you're trying to say, perhaps you're trying to say that why did he choose a neighborhood that is completely dark? I mean, this is brilliant. Another reason why this has helped him get away with this crime. Oh, in costume. Oh, because even though you're in costume, he knows that that Nest camera light is going to come on and illuminate to some degree. He's got a flashlight in his mouth throughout much of this crime. And so he knows that that illumination is also going to expose because of reflection. But doing this at the time he did it, other than him not looking at the fact that this was a full moon, that was a mistake on his part. It was a mistake. Why he picked this particular day, this day, this time, that I do find very interesting. Why did he do that? What was the planning that led to that? One thing he should have looked at was the moon, but other than that, he's been able to evade law enforcement for 43 days. That's pretty good. It's because he went under this cover of darkness. It's because he shielded himself enough, even though we can see his face, enough where he wasn't readily identifiable. There could be his DNA in that house. It sounds like they're very convinced that this mixed DNA sample is his. And again, to review really quickly, why hasn't the DNA brought us the light as to who this is? It's because if you look, the sample has to be divided. So the last thing Sheriff Nano said on March 2nd, if you want to go back and look at that, is that they think it's now more than two profiles. And I haven't even heard that it's Nancy's. He's never said that. We don't know if it's Nancy's. We don't know what these profiles are. He initially said two, and then now he has said more than two. I don't think we have anything other than that, just to try to stay within our facts. And I really need to put a show together. It's just going to take me a little bit to put a show together to talk about what facts we really know. I did one a while back, but now there's so many more facts. I did, really, when I talked to Mac last, I went over a lot of that. So, you know, the facts that we really have, not what it's funny because I get a lot of questions that because the media has said it, perhaps, or it ended up somewhere, that assumption is made. And unless I can go and find it, we just don't know what mixture this is. But what we do know is that it is a mixture, and we know it has to be divided. C.C. Moore did a great interview, please look this up, with News Nation, Natasha Zuvez. If you are like to watch the news and it's a Saturday or Sunday evening, please watch Natasha. She's so good. She really is good. Just really, really enjoy not only being on her show, but watching her interviews. And she did a podcast with News Nation. It's a News Nation podcast, but she oversees it. And she did it with Cece, and it was so good because Cece talks about how, listen, they have to divide out, anytime you have a sample like this, now you have to divide out the profiles. I just can't imagine how difficult this must be. You're looking, you know, at the molecular level and deciding what part of that is the DNA that goes together. I mean, I would think it would all splash together. And she says you have to divide that out and figure out what DNA markers are with each different profile. And I'm like, well, no wonder it's taking forever. And then once you do that, that's just the beginning, right? And you have to worry not to degrade each of those samples. So as you're going through, so it's very difficult. But anyway, I do believe that can happen. I love the idea of putting facts. And that's what I might do, is do a fact sheet spreadsheet on one side with facts known, and then the source of those, and then the non-facts, but that people believe, and either how that was sourced or wasn't sourced. All right. So anyway, again, I'm hoping that the next billboard that gets put up, and this is the billboard example, that is up. Again, the FBI put this up. The FBI is behind this, but it's being funded by privately funded. I'm hoping that the next one they put up has what's really important here, and that's this face. Keep Nancy Guthrie's name out there. Have a small photo, but I tell you, these abductors, nobody saw her in Texas, Arizona. Nobody's seen her anywhere since the abduction. That's not the face people, strangers would have seen. But this face could be seen or could be known. All right, I want to switch now and let's talk about the McCaslin case. And I remember right when I was covering Nancy's case on February 27th, so 27 days into Nancy's abduction, I was researching just people who are missing in this region, and I came across McCaslin and immediately posted on it. And if you, because I was thinking, okay, elderly person, I was just looking from that angle, if any other elderly persons with means had attempted to be kidnapped. And I came across this case, and of course now it's much more in the news. And I want to show you kind of a latest picture of him, because he retired from the Air Force in 2013, 13 years ago, well over a decade ago. Here is one of his really more latest pictures. Now, this is a very, very interesting case because no known dementia of any sort, no reason, kind of like Nancy, that he would have wandered off. He was holding a very high position. I have a lot of notes on him because I think it's important. He was actually still working when he left as a director of technology at the Applied Technical Tech Institute. Do I have that right? I don't think that was right. Anyway, and he was very much, sorry, let me put this up. He was very much working in a very high position. He was also a trustee at Riverside Research. So this is someone who very much was working and had his wits about him. I want to give you a little bit about his background. Listen, this guy is unbelievable. He went to MIT and got a, and I didn't even know this was a particular engineering degree, astronautical engineering. I thought it was a typo. I thought they meant aeronautical. No, it's astronomical, astronautical engineering. How interesting is that? So he is a PhD from MIT. My God, he's brilliant. He also went to the Air Force Academy. That is so difficult to get into. 68 years old when he went missing again on February 27th from Albuquerque, New Mexico. Now, Albuquerque, and I used to live there, is a city that again has this terrain, very deserty, and has all these, the Sandia Mountain is there where you can go snow skiing. And Sandia has all these foothills. I lived right kind of up near those foothills, in a foothill, on a hill. And he loved to hike. He was an avid, avid hiker. And he, let me just put some pictures. He absolutely knew what he was doing when it came to hiking. This is a smart guy. What did he do for his background when he went into the Air Force? So after he graduates from MIT and the Air Force Academy, he works at the research lab at Wright-Patterson Base in Ohio. Wright-Patterson Base is rumored, there is absolutely no proof of this, but it's certainly rumored that there is alien debris, specifically from the Roswell 1947 alien situation, I'll call it, that is purportedly kept there. So a lot of conspiracy theorists like to go with that. And he also had a lot of other positions, the space intelligence director, specifically in charge of space acquisition. So when you look at that, that really doesn't have much to do with aliens. He was in charge of space acquisitions. What did they need when they were going into outer space? And what does that program need? Blah, 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 blah. But he was also affiliated with special DOD programs as a director at one point at the Applied Technical Research part of the Air Force. So, you know, he definitely was in a position. I mean, he was a major general and acting as director over all of this, these departments and so forth. Thank you, CPR Tomy One. I really appreciate that. Yes, I am definitely going to get to this. And conspiracy theorists are trying to say that there's a particular account, if you want to look it up, I think I wrote it here, the account that they're trying to say is his account. I might not have written it down. But there's an account, you can look it up, that, oh, here it is, at TMBS, that's Tom, Mike, Bravo, Sierra, Spaceships. I'm sorry, Tom Mike Bravo Spaceship. So at Tom Mike Bravo Spaceships, if you want to look it up, people are trying to say this is him. And apparently he posted on the 27th, the day he went missing, or this account did. They're also trying to say that no matter what ends up being found out about Major General McCaslin retired, they tried to bring up Major General John Rossi, who killed himself in 2016. This was a 55-year-old two-star general who hung himself. And they tried, conspiracy theorists tried to say, well, he hung himself because private people wanted information that he knew about the nuclear program, and he wouldn't give it to them, so they killed him. So you can see conspiracy theorists are so interesting. In that case, they took the fact that he had, this other general had knowledge about the nuclear program, and they just extrapolate from there and they say, oh, so somebody couldn't get their hands on that, so they killed him, which, if you look at it, is so ridiculous when you look at what it takes to have all of that knowledge, the what you need to create a nuclear type device. I worked in weapons of mass destruction, the counter nuclear proliferation unit, for about a year and a half, maybe a little bit over that, supervising these missions throughout the US. We did 18 of them, and it was great because I wasn't a supervisor behind a desk supervising people. It was supervising missions. In other words, going to other field offices for things we did. And those field offices had the individuals, in other words, all the agents would come together and I would supervise that particular mission in that particular place. So it was so great because you were actually still like working out there doing it. But anyway, it's ridiculous that people think that. And it apparently, for Mr. Rossi, he was under a lot of stress and a lot of pressure, not having much sleep, and they attributed that to contributing to why he killed himself. So let's move on to Mr. McCaslin. First of all, it's been, of course, speculated that he was, he's been murdered or abducted because of his knowledge of the extraterrestrial program and things. His wife, I think her name was Susan. Yes, Susan, she came out and said, pretty much, that's ridiculous. Look, he didn't know anything that many other people knew, and she doesn't believe that. So let's look at, again, going in Occam's razor fashion, let's look at what we really know. What we know is that there was a silver alert issued for him. Okay, a silver alert issued. And that was because of, quote unquote, an unspecified medical situation. Now, the wife hasn't said anything about his medical situation other than she's made it very clear he doesn't have Alzheimer's, he doesn't have dementia, he's very right with his mind. So, makes it very clear. And CPR, I am definitely going to get to your question. Right with his mind, but we don't know what it was because she's not saying. And law enforcement isn't telling, but we know there was a silver alert, particularly because he had some medical situation. I don't want to guess at that. I just want to say that, and he really wasn't elderly. I mean, he's 68, everybody. Is 68 really elderly? Oh my gosh, I hope not. He's not elderly. He was working full time, his mind was about him, he was an avid hiker. This guy is anything other than the epitome of somebody who is elderly, barely able to manage themselves. A very, very young 68, in my view, judging by the jobs or the job he was doing, jobs really, because he was a trustee as well as actively working as a director of technology for a scientific base or science-based company. That's big. And so he's not elderly, everyone. But did he have a physical condition? We know he did, or they couldn't put out a silver alert. Secondarily, well, not secondarily, maybe first. I'm just trying to get to a possible motive by talking about the physical thing that we don't know what it is. We know this. What he took with him and what he didn't take with him is really critical. So what he, oh gosh, I'm going to have to hurry this along. I know I have a News Nation right around the corner. What he took with him is he took his gun, a 38 caliber pistol. Everybody, this isn't used to fend off wolverines and bears and all these other things that people are thinking are in the Sandia foothills. This is a very small caliber, and A revolver is not accurate at all. It's not an accurate shooting, you know, that you could shoot from 100 yards away if something was approaching you. It's something used at very close range and likely only 5 or 6 rounds. So it's not like you're planning on taking a lot of shots. Secondarily, he did not take his glasses, everyone. He did not take his glasses. No one goes hiking. No one does really anything when you have prescription glasses. You just don't. He took his holster so he could easily carry it. He's trained that way. He didn't take his glasses because he knew he wouldn't need them. He knew he wouldn't need them. He went to an area that he loved, an area that he knew, an area that I think he could privately, likely, in my belief, likely take his life. He left behind his cell phone. He left behind his watch, you know, Apple Watch or watch, tracking watch, the wife specifically pointed out, so nobody could track him, so nobody could interrupt what he planned to do. He kept his wallet with him so that when his remains were found, that nobody would have to guess at who it was. So, all right, I have to run. Let's see. Yes, I have to get going because I do have News Nation here coming up. Let me see. Do you think it's odd old photos of Savannah when she was young and her parents were posted on Charlie's obituary plus anonymous? So I've been posting, just to let everybody know, every night, and I hope you guys check these out. I have been posting shorts about Savannah, her family, when she was young. I post a few on X, but mostly on YouTube at night at 9 and 10 or 9 and 11 a lot, 5, 9 and 11, 3 times a night, because I'm trying to keep that story out there. I'm trying to keep her people interested. Who was Savannah? How did she go through the grief process? Charlie, you know, the pictures of Charlie and now missing their grandmother. Because if people lose interest in the story, then the problem with that is it can go cold in the media. And when it goes cold in the media, somebody who might actually know something may not see something because it's not out there anymore. So I'm going to continue to do that. I find it all very interesting also to see the different parts of the house and that. And that's what the perpetrator could have also been looking at well before this act. Everyone, I have to rush. Thank you for being here. I so appreciate it. Pray for Nancy. Pray for her family. Pray for the McCaslin family. Again, he didn't take his glasses. He did take a gun. He left behind anything that could track him. He kept his ID because he wouldn't want people who found him to wonder who this was. And he went to where he knew and loved. Did it have something to do with his health? I think it could have. Just judging from other cases where people have taken their lives, it's when they feel desperate and they feel that sense of no answers. So anyway, I hope I'm wrong, but I fear that that's what happened in this case from the facts I've known and seen. All right, everybody, until next time, may justice be served for all the missing and for Nancy Guthrie. And I hope they find McCaslin soon. Thank you.